Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tome of Daniel Blake. I'm your host, Griff Garrison. I've been trying to find information on Daniel, and nothing has seemed to come up online. And nothing I could find had the Bleakhaven Skeptic, but I found out now that it's called the Bayside Star. So I contacted the paper, and they put me in contact with a guy named Daryl Stack. Daryl, how are you?
Well, my dog threw up on the carpet this morning, but, can't complain.
Dogs, what are you going to do with them, you know? So could you tell us about Daniel Blake? What do you know about him?
Well, when you contacted us, I did some research through some of our archives. I actually hadn't really known too much about Blake, even though he's tangential to one of my favorite stories. He's a frequent contributor to the paper. I don't think he actually wrote anything himself, but he worked closely with one of the writers on the paper often enough that his name kept coming up. It seems the Secretary of Defense, Bill Hamblin, worked with him closely for a long time before entering the public light. And Blake was hired by people around the country as what was called a parapsychologist, basically a quack at the time. He was the ward of an eccentric millionaire. So we assume that's how he financed his little ghost hunting business. Although he did help several police forces across the country, including Bleakhaven's. As strange as he was, he helped to bring down one of the worst serial killers in our history, the Red Stripe Carver.
Oh man, that's crazy. I had no idea he was involved. What can you tell us about the Carver for all those who haven't heard of him?
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there that probably have heard of him, but the story that I mentioned earlier, the Red Stripe Carver essentially was given his name by the skeptic due to the Red Stripe cigarettes that he left behind at several of the crime scenes. His real name was Joshua Pike.
Wait, Pike? We've heard that name before, especially in all the other journal entries. How was Blake involved with his capture?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the details admittedly are a bit fuzzy. Blake helped write the article for the skeptic at the time, but it goes against the police report and Hamblin's own account from years later. It just seems to be pretty distorted by fantasy. It does seem to be that Blake and Hamblin cornered the Carver, injured him somehow, and held him until the police got there. Hamblin also remarked that Blake was responsible for Pike's missing right hand from a previous encounter.
Wait, Blake cut off Pike's hand?
Well, it's a bit of a legend. Nobody really knows how he lost it for sure. I'd say that it probably actually happened in World War I.
Wow, World War I. Was there a woman involved in Pike's capture? A woman named Rainey, perhaps?
There may have been something about a woman. I don't remember. They wouldn't have focused on her too much at the time.
Okay. So how many people did Pike kill? Tell us more about his crimes.
Well, we don't know much about the Carver before he started killing up in a little town called Milton. He was able to amass some followers and just started killing them. It also seems that the police chief at the time drove him out of Milton and he worked his way into Bleakhaven. It's still not known how many he actually brainwashed and then killed. We know that he did have connection to the Bleakhaven Suits, who were the dominant crime organization at the time, so there's a lot that he could have covered up with their help.
I imagine. You're being so informational. I really appreciate this. What happened with Pike the Carver?
Well, it's confirmed that he ended up taking his own life in custody shortly after Hamblin and Blake helped to stop him.
So in the book we're reading on the podcast, Daniel's Journal, Daniel talks a lot about monsters and the occult. What do you make of that?
Well, both the Carver and Blake seem to be obsessed with the occult. Not unlike yourself, I suppose. Whether he believed it or not, the Red Stripe Carver perpetuated stories of monsters and supernatural beings. It's commonly believed that he did so just to convince his followers to do some unspeakable things. He likely used drugs to get him to believe it all. Daniel, as stated before, was a parapsychologist. He made his living off of ghosts and goblins and you know, all those things that go bump in the night. So when we talk about these men, we need to remember that they had a vested interest in spreading as much of this magic mumbo jumbo as possible. So it's not surprising that they're sort of shrouded in that mythos that's always larger than reality. And because of this, there's really no shortage of conspiracy theories out there. It's hard to sort fact from fiction, honestly. People are always making connections where there really aren't any.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of what we're doing on this podcast with Daniel's journal, along with just trying to figure out, you know, if Daniel Blake's journal is actually fact or fiction. An officer actually went missing, Officer Mathers, and we're kind of using this to see if maybe we can piece some things together to find out what happened to him. But you don't believe any of this stuff, like that we've been reading in the journal?
Well, I believe Daniel was either a liar or so deluded that he believed his own lies. I think he saw things that he couldn't explain, and maybe his imagination kind of ran wild. I do think that he deserves some modicum of respect, as his work did help stop the Carver and many other small happenings around the country at the time. How about you? You believe any of this, Griff?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I think there's a lot we can explain in this world. I don't know what Daniel actually saw, but I think it's possible that some of what he saw was real. I've seen things I can't even explain. The last crazy thing I saw was when I was a custodian, and I know it's pretty unbelievable, but I'm pretty sure I saw some sort of floating orb, and that kind of got me into this, and it seems really stupid now, but I mean, right now, though, I think the book is an interesting piece of history, and I'm really enjoying going through it.
Well, I'm glad that you can find some enjoyment from it, but you just remember to take it all with a grain of salt. Floating orbs, or several grains of salt. I think the book itself doesn't really have all that much historical relevance. In fact, it's what the paper tried to get away from when the name was changed.
Yeah. That leads me to another question. So there's still a Bleak Haven skeptic today, but that's not you guys. That's not the paper that Daniel was involved with. What happened there?
Well, there was a split many decades ago. You see, the skeptic wanted to go towards a more legitimate route, especially after the sudden passing of the editor who was obsessed with all that supernatural stuff. So they dropped the name Skeptic and changed it simply to the Bayside Star. I don't know too much about this, but others revitalized the name of the Bleak Haven Skeptic, and they picked up doing all that weird occult stuff again. Really, these days it's a little more than a blog and a tabloid that you can maybe pick up at certain less than reputable gas stations.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to wrap up our podcast for today. I really like to thank you, Mr. Daryl Stack, for being on the podcast with us today. I hope your dog feels better. Hope you can go get that dog checked out.
Well, it's my pleasure to help you out. You know, that dog, he got into some of those blueberry muffins. He just loves them, but I think it's a bit too much sugar for him, so he's going to be all right.
Makes you think, what are you putting in those blueberry muffins?
That's for me to know and you to find out.
And we'll all find out next time on the Tome of Daniel Blake. Thank you all.
Bye-bye.